So before I introduce our 10-minute speaker, I just would like to let you know when I first moved here and got sober, she was one of the first persons that I met, and I thought, oh my God, she has 4 years, you know, and she had what I wanted. And then 7 years later, we're still doing the deal. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Paula B. from San Luis Obispo.
That was quite an introduction. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. And wow, this is cool. welcome to Rio Grande, the Central Coast. I hope your drive was less than 5 hours, hopefully. You got here. That's great. Hopefully you left at like 7 a.m. I'm sure that was the case. No. Yeah, just really glad to be here. And welcome to our newcomers. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I don't just say that because there's a microphone in my face. I mean, partly because there literally is a microphone in my face. But the reality for me is I stumbled into Alcoholics Anonymous again at 21 years old, and I haven't had a drink since. And that was 11 years ago. My sobriety date is February 23rd of 2008. So last Saturday, I did celebrate 11 years of continuous sobriety. Just one of those miracles, right? Like there's, 300 of us in here, and I'm just one of you. So yeah, the fact that at 8:10 on a Saturday night, I'm not drunk, and I'm not planning the whole rest of my evening around alcohol is a really big deal in my world. I couldn't string together more than a couple hours or a couple days at a time. So yeah, this is a big deal. I always start off by saying my sobriety date, and really like to put emphasis on the fact that that is really the only perfect part of my sobriety. I say that because a higher power chose that sobriety date for me. Before getting sober this time, I used to use like sobriety dates or getting sober as like a hobby. Tomorrow, next week, when I'm 25, 30, any time but right now was a good time to get sober. And what that really meant for me is that I couldn't stop drinking. And it was unfathomable to think of a life without alcohol. And that's where my alcoholism took me, is into the depths of not only insanity, but we talk about alcoholism as you know, taking a drink and the drink takes me in. And I lose the power of choice when I drink. And then I absolutely didn't have a vote in whether or not I drink or not. When I didn't want to, I had to drink. When I wanted to, I drank. When I had every intention under the sun not to drink today, I drank. I didn't want to towards the end, and I drank. And, you know, I started drinking at 14, almost 15, and I was one of those kids who was never going to drink. I had alcoholism in my home. Our family looked really, really cute from the outside, but we had those things called secrets on the inside. And, you know, and I was the, I guess, target, for lack of a better word, of somebody's alcoholism, you know, in my home. And it was embarrassing, and it was confusing, and it was something we never talked about. And it was something that once we left the door, you know, was not in existence. We just acted. And so I learned at like 3 or 4 years old how to act. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to be. I didn't even know who I was. I just knew that at 3 years old, I was already shoving every emotion and feeling and experience as far into my pinky toe as possible. And that carried through into sobriety. So that was one of my best tools in my, you know, toolbox. But, you know, so I was never going to drink because I hate what had happened, you know, when alcohol was around. And inevitably, you know, in high school, I was a freshman in high school, and I went to enough parties, and I wanted to fit in more than I cared about whether I drank or not. And finally, you know, the bottle of pop-off came around our little circle, and it was on. And in that moment, pop-off did for me what I could not do for myself. When I drank for the first time, something happened that I hadn't experienced ever. And it was this feeling of freedom. It was this feeling of ease and comfort. And not that I had those words at 14 years old. Probably the words that I had was, this is awesome. This is fun. Like, really, like, like I didn't care anymore. I didn't care. I didn't care what you thought about me. I didn't care what I thought about myself. I wasn't scared. I wasn't crawling out of my skin. I didn't think about what had happened every day leading up to, you know, my 14 and a half years of life. None of that mattered. I was in the moment. I was with you. It was fun, and I knew exactly what I was going to do moving forward because I now had the answer to all of my problems, all of them, and it was in that bottle. It was in that bottle, and I didn't know that I would chase that for the next 6 years. I didn't know, and I didn't know that by chasing that, I would dive into the deep end of the pool of alcoholism, and that everything that I never could fathom would happen would actually happen. Would actually happen, you know? I didn't plan on drinking away my academics. I didn't plan on drinking away my, you know, we all knew basketball scholarship and future. I didn't plan on drinking away my friendships, my ability to care about my family, the ability to take care of myself, the ability to care about anything, quite frankly. But that's what happened pretty quickly after I started drinking. And so everything that I loved, everything that I worked hard for, everything that was dear and near to me became secondary of that. And drinking became the most important thing in my life. And that just carried through. And so I had consequences due to my drinking. And it wasn't because of my drinking. Like, I got a DUI because I didn't eat enough, right? Like, I got another DUI because I was in the wrong place, wrong time. It really had nothing to do with the fact that I had a 0.27 alcohol content at 10 a.m. Like, that's not because of alcohol. That's because of, you know... And that's the way that I think, you know. When I'm drinking, when I'm in my alcoholism, I don't live on planet Earth with the rest of you. I live in this very skewed reality where I cannot differentiate right from wrong, good from bad. I have a thought and I just go on it. I have plans and they're all good. All of them. So I get arrested a lot. I lose relationships. I get the look. All these things happen. Every day, and so I go to things called like jail and rehab and hospitals, and I'm still gonna make it work. I'm still gonna make it work. Next time it's gonna be different. It wasn't that bad. I have to. And the underlying thing right there is like I have to drink. I have to drink. And so it happened for me on February 22nd of 2008. I was living down in Orange County. I had recently, well, about 6 months prior, gotten my second DUI. Not my fault. So I didn't have a car. I was living down there because, I was living in sober living, and it wasn't about really getting sober. It was about getting away from my life, getting away from my own reality. Like, I live really, really comfortably, 20 miles minimum from my own truth. That's where I live comfortably. I cannot acknowledge my own truth if it hit me upside the head, you know. I cannot do that. And so I moved down to Orange County into sober living because I couldn't handle life here in San Luis Obispo. I just couldn't. And on February 22nd of 2008, I had a good plan. And the plan was to manipulate my parents to get me a train ticket to come back up to San Luis Obispo. I'd been living down in sober living for 3 weeks, so clearly it was time to come up and visit. And of course they bought me a ticket. They loved me. They loved me almost to death. Those are my parents. And so they bought me a train ticket, and on my way to San Luis Obispo I came. And I was finally 21 years old. Finally 21. And my plan on the train was just to have a beer. A beer. And this is alcoholism to a T. One beer led to two. Two led to three. Three led to Bloody Marys. Now I'm drinking with everybody on the train. The conductor's buying me alcohol. Same dance, different day, right? Blacked out, passed out. There it happened. Happened again. And I was only going to have one beer, you know? So what happened for me is we pulled into the train station in San Luis Obispo that late afternoon, and my parents are there to pick up their sober daughter, and I was anything but that. And I was in a blackout, and all I remember was just stumbling off the train and looking up, and I was struck sober for just a moment, long enough to look up and see my parents, and the look on their faces of, oh my God, what are we going to do with you? And that wasn't a foreign look for an alcoholic like me. As I alluded to before, I got that look pretty much the night I started drinking. Whether it be my parents, my friends, boyfriends, teachers, police officers, judges, my lawyers, the mailman, they all just, that was it, right? And I drank at that look. I couldn't, that was too much. But anyways, in that moment, something was different, everything was different. And I knew in that moment exactly who I was and what I needed to do. And I do say that was the most significant thing that's ever happened. And I didn't know in that moment that it was significant. I didn't know all these things that I'm telling you right now, because back in the blackout I went, and I came to the next morning, and the need to drink from the inside out was gone, and I haven't had a drink since. And that is truly my higher power working in my life, because as I stated before, I could not string together time of sobriety. I could not stay sober. I intended to not drink, and I couldn't. That was not me. It was not me. And so that was 11 years ago. And my life here in Alcoholics Anonymous has been amazing. It's been amazing. And it's been life. You know, I didn't participate in life before. I drank my way away from life for as long as I could. And I never faced life. I never faced my own reality. I never took responsibility. I was a victim when I came in. You were the problem. Drinking was the problem. But now everything should be good, right? I realized that about 6 months of sobriety, what alcoholism actually was. And it didn't necessarily involve alcohol. It involved that mind I alluded to earlier, the one with lots of good plans, the one who thinks that next time it's going to be different, the one that just rationalizes and justifies every single thing. And I woke up in excruciating pain at about 6 months sober because I had something called untreated alcoholism. I was absorbing a seat here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wasn't doing a dang thing. I was bouncing around different sponsors, work one and two with you, work one with you, work 1.5 with you. Like, that's what I do. Because once it gets real, once you can see through me just a little bit, I run. I'm a runner. And so at 6 months sober, I'm in excruciating pain, waking up, and I knew in that moment that if nothing changed, nothing was going to change. And the way that I had been living for that 6 months, and thank God it was only 6 months, but the way that I had been living was not going to keep me sober. It was not going to keep me sober. It was not sustainable. And in so many tears, I hit my knees and I prayed to a God that I had never sincerely prayed to before. And I said, God, please help me. I cannot do this anymore. And all of a sudden, I found myself calling a woman who I didn't even know who she was. I had just been given the number a few days before. I called her and I asked for help. And the miracle happened. I showed up, and my journey here has looked just like that ever since. You know, I have relationships here in Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of people here, and it's not because I just absorb a seat here. It's because I've worked the steps. It's because, yes, I go to a lot of meetings. You know, it's because I'm of service, you know, being part of the convention committee, going into CMC, sponsoring women, you know, secretarying meetings. I mean, that list goes on and on and on. I'm plugged in here because, you know, what we get here, I need all of it. Like, I have to do A through Z and everything in between in order for me to stay clean and sober and damn happy about it. Because I have the tendency in sobriety to forget that I have lost the privilege to run my own life. I have zero business running the show. And I find myself often, every day, saying the third step. God, we know the third step here. I'm not going to take 5 minutes saying it, but I say the third step prayer, and then I go on with my day. And then I find myself, I sit comfortably in the back seat, my seatbelt's on in my car called life, right? And all of a sudden, I'm like taking off the seatbelt and opening up the back seat door and like trying to get into the front seat and get my hands back on the steering wheel. That's what I do. I am trying to run the show when I have zero business running the show, right? And I'm constantly reminded that the third step is about turning my will and my life over to the care of my higher power. And beautiful things happen, amazing things happen when I am just open to whatever God's will is. I am still not cured here. You know, I am not cured. I am far from finished here. But I love it. I love my life here. And it's because of what we do. It's because of what we do. So if you're new, I sincerely welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the best life I've ever known. I like to say that alcoholism is the thing that took me away from life. And AA is the very thing that brings me back. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you.
Give Paula another hand.